Very pleased to be joined by our next guest. We don't know when he'll be able to use his expertise fully with the NHL draft. We do know at some point, probably, he will be able to. It is Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet draft expert and knower of all things junior hockey. Sam, how are you today?
Great, Peter. Thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it. And hopefully with all the buzz of the continuation of the season that the draft stuff starts to heat up too, and I'm sure it will.
Yeah, well, it sounded like we were going to get it in a couple of weeks back at the beginning of the month. We did that. I'm sure you're well prepared anyway, but was that kind of a, oh, crap, I might have to do this really soon?
Well, it's been chipping away at it, so I haven't gone full bore yet, but I've been chipping away at the work. You know, obviously a lot of phone calls, and sometimes in these situations where you don't have the pressure, you can have some really nice, easy dialogue. And sometimes the dialogue with the network takes you outside of the realm of hockey. And so essentially you're just relationship building. So that's actually been a really fun part of the work that's gone on to this point.
Now, as far as the draft is concerned, is this still Lafreniere's world and we're all just living in it? Or has someone taken over that number one spot?
No, Lafreniere's the guy. I don't think there's any question about that. I do think, though, that there's going to be some drama created by what happens after Lafreniere's pick. And, you know, a lot of people think Quentin Byfield was the guy who was cemented to be in that spot. I was a big believer in that for a long time. But over the last month or month and a half, and just with some of the conversations that I've been having, I'm not so certain that that's going to be the case now. And I think the German, Tim Stützle, has really kind of made his way up the charts. And he seems to be the guy now that is looking to be maybe the number two pick. So that's going to be a fun part to watch. That's going to be some of the exciting part of this draft, because typically you think about all who's going to be the top guy. Is it Hedman? Is it Tavares? Is it Tyler? Is it Taylor? Well, in this particular situation, we're looking at Lafreniere and then who? Byfield, Stützle, Drysdale, Raymond, Holt, so on and so forth. So that's going to be the fun part of the conversation here moving forward.
So Byfield potentially moving down, is it more what he hasn't done or what others have done?
Well, I think it's a little bit more about what others have done, but I think there is a cautionary tale there, because when I look at Quentin Byfield, I look at a guy who I think is a little bit immature. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but what I mean to say by that is that his ceiling is probably higher, because even physically, as big as he is at 6'4", 215, I think he's still got a lot of ways to go to build even height, strength, and muscle onto that frame already. And so then I look at a guy who I think, you know, he's been kind of sheltered and he's been the best guy wherever he's been and hasn't had to face a ton of adversity yet. And so I think that in small part makes him immature from the mental side of things. And again, I don't say that to be disparaging. I say that because it's a cautionary tale to say, hey, teams, if you're going to bypass this guy, just be certain that his ceiling might be higher than what you project to be based on some of that immaturity.
Now, with the evaluation process, obviously there's one last piece of this puzzle that's missing, and that's no Canadian Hockey League playoffs and no Memorial Cup. Not every prospect would have been in those games, obviously, but how tough is it to evaluate without that last little piece in there?
Well, you know what, Peter? I'd say two things that are also very remarkable at this time of year when it comes to scouting, and that would be the under-18 Worlds. That's mitigated somewhat by this draft class because there's so many late 01-borns who those players would not have been eligible anyway, but some of the other ones who are true 2002-borns might have had that opportunity, especially a guy like Damon Hunt, who plays in Moose Jaw, who was injured a big part of the year. Justin Barron in Halifax, who missed he's a late birthday, but guys of that ilk who might have missed time throughout the year would have had the opportunity to play in that event. And then you have the NHL Combine that's missing as well. So that's where, you know, general managers tend to be able to get face-to-face with players. Yes, they've had Zoom calls and FaceTimes and all that, but it's not quite the same as being able to read the body language and look at a player eye-to-eye, face-to-face. So those are also two key events missing. Now, getting back to the Memorial Cup, getting back to the CHL playoffs, oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you get an opportunity to watch players in high-leverage situations, you want to take that opportunity. You want to see how they respond when they're banged up a little bit, when there's adversity in front of them and those types of things. And that's what the playoffs typically presents to the scouts. So, and a guy that I'll kind of earmark and go backwards a little bit is Quentin Byfield. I mean, you look at him at the World Juniors, he started out at camp as being a guy who was probably a top six guy by the time the World Juniors had ended. I don't even know if he played a minute in the gold medal game. So you're looking at a guy who, you know, then he goes to the prospects game. He's just okay there. He's not outstanding. I think it was a good time for him to get in that showdown against Lafreniere. Didn't really do much in that game. So when it comes to high leverage situations, such as the playoffs, such as the under-18s, you want to see players perform in those events. And I think maybe an average grade for a guy like Byfield in situations like the World Juniors and the top prospects game. So definitely those are important times to evaluate.
In conversation with Sam Cosentino here on Pinder and Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Logan?
Sam, I'm curious as to what you think the impact of a potential later draft might have on some prospects potentially making a jump immediately from their draft year into the NHL. I don't know how many of the prospects you would feel maybe outside Lafreniere had a chance to do that, depending on where they get drafted, obviously. But can you see a later draft maybe having an impact on some of those teams maybe being hesitant to draw a guy right into the lineup with less time in their system?
Well, it's funny you say that, because it's a two-sided coin. But the way I look at it, there's probably only a handful of guys that would have been able to make that jump in any event. But there's one way to look at it and say, well, we haven't had enough time to show scouts. The flip side of that is, if you happen to have some resources and you happen to have some good guidance with your personal people and your personal trainers, you might be able to take advantage of that time and build yourself a better body, a stronger body. You might be able to, with lower body work, make your skating better. You might be able to, stick handling on fake ice, improve on all those areas, and you might surprise some people when you go to camp. So I think it is a two-headed coin. The other thing that you have to consider here is what kind of rules are going to be put in place by the National Hockey League based on when this draft takes place. Now, if you're a team that drafts a player like a Raymond or a Holtz, for example, and you think that player is good enough to come over right away, is it a situation where you have the agreement? Is the agreement going to be allowed to be enforced? Will he have already started his season playing in the Swedish league? So those things will all have to be taken into consideration and way, way above my pay grade, boys.
You actually mentioned the next name I was going to mention was Lucas Raymond. I'm curious if there's still an added value for a young man to play in a league like the SJHL in, you know, sort of above his age group. Do NHL scouts still see that as an advantage heading into a draft, or are they okay seeing, you know, Canadian content or players against each other at the junior level?
Well, some of these guys are tweeners, especially those that play in Europe. And I think Raymond was exactly in that situation this year. And there are circumstances, maybe team situation, where the team's a little bit better, it's a little bit older, and so they can ill afford to play their younger guys as much as they would have liked, so they don't get the kind of playing time. So it was very intermittent, especially for Raymond, whenever he was in the SHL. A guy like Holtz played a little bit more regularly at about 10 minutes per game, more third/fourth line minutes, but still a little bit more to kind of get a read on what he's able to do against men. So when I look at that situation for Raymond in particular, you would have surely had to do your due diligence on him going back to the Olenka Gretzky when playing against his peer group, and also in the rare situation where he was able to get minutes in the SHL. But you also have the World Juniors. You know, there are some events there that if you really pick and choose and you've scouted accordingly, that you should have been able to see him plenty enough, you know, in key situations.
Speaking with Sam Cosentino, we're talking all things about a potential NHL draft. Now that me and Peter have gotten our questions out of the way, the main event, of course, now, Mr. Loubardias, you're all in with Sam.
Yeah, I don't know Sam very well. Maybe I can ask a few questions acquainted. I remember you and I being in the car together after last year's draft last summer. And I think, you know, you were the first to point out, we talked, we'd both seen the Holinka Gretzky tournament in Edmonton the previous year, and both had a pretty good feeling that first round, you'd have to go a long ways for teams not to end up with a pretty good player. Now, I know we didn't get to see it in earnest, but you probably don't feel a whole lot different about this class.
No, I love this group. And I think in part, Pete, because you're looking at, especially in the high end, plenty of late 01s. So it's like, you know, those guys that have had their extra year or those extra time to be able to make that impression upon scouts and maybe play internationally in some different situations than your regular born birth class. So if you can have those situations early on in your career where as an underage player you're playing above your age group and still have success, that's usually a good mark and it sets the tone for how you're going to be scouted moving forward.
And I think what you would make crystal clear too, and this hasn't always been the case, but this is a really, really good year for players in our country of Canada, which hasn't always been the case the last few years, has it?
No, it's been a bit of a dip and a dive. And a couple of things back to there, Pete, is you look at, you know, the number of Canadian players, and then if you were to break it down more to specifically about players that played in the Canadian Hockey League in each of the three leagues, you would have been able to pick out a year in maybe the last five where you say, oh, wow, that's a really strong year for the Dub, or that's a really strong year for the Q, or the Ontario Hockey League had a lot of success in this particular year. When I look at this year, the 2020 draft, now I'm thinking about, oh yeah, the Dub. Hey, there's some guys sneaking up on you there. You look at Braden Schneider and Ridley Gregg. You talk about Damon Hunt. Is he going to be that guy? Jake Neighbors out in Edmonton. So you're talking about a lot of high-end guys. And then I go to the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. You think about Maverick Bork and Hendrix LaPierre and Justin Barron, and the list moves on from there. And you could say the very same things about what's happening in Ontario, you know, with the likes of Jamie Drysdale and Quinton Byfield and so on and so forth. So this is a year for me, maybe the most that I can remember in the years covering it, where you're seeing great balance between the three CHL leagues and in numbers as well. And so that's something I'm really excited about for sure.
Now, I'm not going to get you to give away any of your trade secrets. You've done such an amazing job since you've been in that role and since the draft has become a big part of what you do. But I would ask this, my friend. Are there one or two players that I wouldn't say took you by storm this season in your viewings and in your preparation, but would one or two guys come to mind when I ask you that question?
A couple of guys. So Dawson Mercer would be the first one. I knew he had a good year last year in Drummondville. I knew he was playing more back of the bus. So for him to have a good year, you know, really took something for him. But I liked his awareness, his intuitiveness, that when he came back this year, he basically said, you know what? Yeah, I don't want to live on last year. I was on a good team, and so everyone's going to think that I got my numbers based on me playing on a good team. He took the approach to say, like, hey, even without some of these older guys around, I'm really good, and I'm going to show everybody that I'm really good. And for him to go out there and impress and make the World Juniors, huge accomplishment. And then the year he had, getting to meet the young man just to see how passionate he is and how happy he is and the kind of countenance he presents, awesome. So he's one guy. Another guy who I was really impressed with, I think, is Jake Neighbors. Had the opportunity to speak with him. He grew up in kind of an interesting family situation and is open about the divorce of his, you know, his mother and father, and how both sides have found a way to have common ground where they can still get along and have been able to kind of show him and provide him with what he needed as a young man growing up, despite the difficult family situation. And so when I look at his game, it's got a little bit of that. And you and I talked about this the other day, Pete. You call it a Mike Richards-esque type of game. But I look at a guy who's got a game that I think really plays now. You're talking about a guy who can bump and grind, who can get under your skin like Matthew Tkachuk, which is a guy that he's proud to say that he looks at as an idol. Yet he has the ability to score. He goes to dirty areas. You know, he skates pretty good. So there's a lot to like about that particular player. So those were two guys for me that I think really jumped out this year. But, Pete, you know, a lot of what I base my stuff on is getting just to shake a hand, look a guy in the eye, you know, speak face-to-face with them and get a real sense of what the person is all about. And then once you make that determination on what you feel about the person, then you can look at the player and make that judgment and make that judgment without being clouded by something that, you know, that might take you away from what he does on the ice.
Okay, so now I'm going to get more to you, if it's okay. Sam and I did our first Memorial Cup We did our first Memorial Cup together in 2006, and you know, we're really, really good friends, and I'm so proud of this guy and what he's done, and he should be in Kelowna calling another one right now. And again, I don't like to bring up bad things, but when that journey outside of, you still tell people that the first game we did together was an American League game in 04, and you said you thought I was ready to stab you that night. That's not completely true by any stretch.
Somewhat, but anyway.
But, you know, you've been doing such a great job with it since 2006, which is in Moncton. Can you believe how many years have gone by, and would you have ever imagined the impact that being the color analyst in the Canadian Hockey League and what it's meant to your world?
Well, it's meant everything to me. It really has, because, you know, there was a time there where I was doing some lacrosse and doing some baseball and still being able to do the CHL games, which is the original reason why I committed full-time to Sportsnet some 15 years ago. But to be perfectly honest with you, the way it's worked out and the reason why I think I have such a good network of people across the CHL is all the stuff that you taught me. And I don't want this to be, you know, a kiss-ass session and whatever else, but you know, for you, Peter, and for you, Logan, to get introduced to Pete in the American Hockey League, which, quite frankly, I didn't really know what it was, to get introduced to the Western Hockey League, which I knew what it was but hadn't been ingrained into it whatsoever, and for Pete taking me along on those rides, say, hey, man, you better go to practices, you better go to games. Even when you feel awkward about it, you better go down and talk to coaches and talk to as many people as you can. So taking that cue and, you know, traveling early and making extra drives to go and watch games or practices when you probably didn't have to do it, those were all important steps in kind of creating, you know, what it is I do today with the draft and my work in the CHL. So you've played a much larger part than that, Pete, than you'd ever wanted to admit. But the fact of the matter is you instilled that work ethic into me, especially in areas where I wasn't really comfortable. You know, I knew about baseball. I'd been around baseball my whole life. It was easy to talk to people in that game. Lacrosse, the guys are all like you and I, so it's easy to talk to people in that realm. But getting into the CHL and the AHL, where things were uncomfortable for me, you were a guy who kind of forced me to go and do the due diligence. And I think that's why, you know, it's been able to kind of morph into this draft thing. So I want to thank you for that. But it, honestly, the CHL has meant everything to me. It's unbelievable people who are underpaid, who work extremely hard, and a bunch of amazing owners, general managers, coaches, scouts. I can't, you know, thank you enough for introducing me to that world and telling me how to go about my business the right way, because, boy, I don't ever want to think about the days where I'm not able to do it. And luckily enough, we're still able to do it and be a part of it, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're being far too kind, because for those people who don't know Sam, in all my years of being around the sport, I'm not sure I've ever seen someone have two things that he has. I've never seen anybody who maybe wasn't exposed to the game like some other games pick up the game as quickly, to be able to analyze it, to break it down. And more importantly, this guy's likability meter is off the charts. Unlike me, who could rub somebody wrong in a one car parade, this guy just, his likability factor, and there's a reason he's been able to take this venture and do such incredible things. I want to ask before we go, the Memorial Cup itself. Now there's so many memories, and I say to people, for me personally, and I don't even know if I've ever even asked you this question, we've been friends for a long time now. For me, there was just nothing ever like that feeling on the Saturday night in anticipation of the final Sunday, and knowing that we were going to get a chance to broadcast it to the country, and all that work and all the culmination. For you now, which would have been, I think, number 15 or number 16, is there something that just stands out, my friend, about what you've enjoyed most about that part of your job?
Well, you know, working in the CHL, the numbers aren't always the greatest. The respect the property is given isn't always the greatest. It's not always on the, you know, on the front of everyone's mind. So the Memorial Cup is a time when, you know, you can take that and it becomes a frontline event and becomes something that people pay attention to, and it becomes a property that gains some respect, although it should have that respect all year round, but it does have it more prominently during those 2 weeks in May. So I enjoy that part of it because I enjoy telling the stories of our young men and telling the stories of our great coaches and where they've come from and where they've gone to, and telling stories about adversity and about trying to not only entertain people with the games that we're showing, but inform them as well. Hey, do you know this about that guy? Or did you know this about that player? Do you know what happened to this guy? So I enjoy that part of it, being able to tell the stories of the great people in the Canadian Hockey League. So that part has been supremely enjoyable. But having that feeling, you know, before the final where you're trying to analyze and you're trying to handicap it and prognosticate, hey, what's going to happen? And then you go out and you get something entirely different from what you expect, or you kind of roll back on the games throughout the course of the week, and you're like, I can't believe this happened, or, you know, all these things that over the course of the week, when the story builds to the final game, that have actually taken place to get you to the final game. And that's probably the part we miss most. But to be perfectly honest with you, Pete, it's like you talk to a hockey player who's retired, and what do they tell you is the thing that they miss most? They tell you that they miss the room. They miss the guys. And honestly, what I miss most, as much as being in Kelowna is a fantastic place, what I'll miss most this year is not being able to have a beer with the guys after the game and a great night's work and being able to shake everyone's hand or pat them on the back and say, hey, thanks for the great replays, thanks for the direction, the producing, all those sorts of things. It's about being with the group of guys and having that experience, and that men and women for that matter, and having that experience with them. So you have someone to go along on the ride with, and that's probably what I'll miss most about this, which would have been my 15th.
Well, as you know, and I know we share this very much in common, you know, the games are one thing and preparing and doing the shows, but, you know, and maybe someday we'll have our own podcast or our own show, and the stories, you know, whether it's our good friend Mr. Falds, RJ, who I had the pleasure of working with, you know, that event, just each and every year, which you've been able to do for a long time, it's about the people in the truck and the people that produce and the people that produce the openings and the tape guys. And I mean, it's 9 or 10 days of just, it's about team. And it's like you said, that's so well said, my friend, because the thing that I love the most about it and cherish the eight I was lucky enough is that for those couple of weeks, it was a team, and it was people to this day that they loved the product. They loved putting on the event. And you're right. It's, you don't miss the games as much as you miss the conversations and the camaraderie.
Yeah, amen. Going to the morning skates, having a coffee, maybe taking off the one extra beer you had the night before, although that's not a case for you, but has been for me on occasion. And just getting
Well, I was a good driver.
And, yeah, you ain't lying. yeah. No, we're lucky, guys. And Peter and Logan, thanks for, you know, the opportunity to kind of reminisce a little bit and speak positively about the league and about the people we work with. It's I really appreciate that opportunity because getting to the point now where I'm really, really starting to miss it.
Yeah, of course. Glad we could let you guys reminisce there. That was some fun listening. I do have a couple more questions here as we wrap things up today. You guys talking about the broadcasts and the guys in the truck and that kind of camaraderie. I would imagine that it's something similar with an NHL draft broadcast as well. And that's definitely not going to be the case this time around with everyone being in person, I would imagine. Have you guys had any talks about how different an NHL draft broadcast is going to look like this year?
Well, it's funny. I completed a piece a couple of days ago, and I don't know if it's been posted yet on .ca, but I made some suggestions as to how I thought you might be able to kind of make this an entirely different experience for everybody. But getting to the broadcast itself, I think you know, it's even a little too early to say that we're not going to have, I mean, it's not going to be in Montreal, and it's not going to have the hoopla of the drafts that I've done for Sportsnet since, you know, since we took over the rights. But it still is a situation that I think may end up being a little bit different and a little bit bigger than what people might anticipate. This has to do in large part as to when they decide they're going to play, if they decide that, and then from there, decide when the draft's going to be. Let's be honest here. The general managers all want this thing to be done after the season's over so that they can conduct their course of business as in as regular a manner as possible. So we might be looking at something that takes place in September, or October, or November, and who knows what our world looks like then. If they can have it at a small gathering, if they can bring the players in and give them that on-stage experience. So I think it's a little too early to say that, hey, we're all going to be in a virtual place like the NFL was and have the draft that way. So I'm kind of anxiously awaiting and hoping that they wait a while so that they can conduct business as close to possible and that we can be a part of that team that you talk about.
And last one for you. You mentioned in there before that in a previous life you were working very close with baseball. They're having a bit of a time figuring out what to do and how to come back. If they come back, what have you made of everything coming out of Major League Baseball right now?
No, they're boneheads. All of them. All of them are boneheads. I mean, let's go back to 94 and, oh, yeah, well, we better go on strike. And, oh, yeah, well, we better have another labor dispute. I don't, like, there's a lot of people that I run into now that say, yeah, I just never came back after 94. And if this were, and if there were a stoppage based on the health situation that we're in that fell outside the confines of people not being, not feeling safe enough to do their jobs, and they simply did it for, hey, I don't want to take the pay cut, I don't want the 50-50 split, so on and so forth, then they're boneheads and they deserve everything that's coming to them. I do think, though, that baseball has always had hardline posturing by both sides, so this is really no different than what's happened in the past. Are they going to get to that place where they're not going to play because of things outside of health? If they do that, I think the game's going to be in some big trouble.
Perfectly put, and a great place to end this off, Sam. Thank you for doing this today. That was a lot of fun listening to you and Lubo chat. Hopefully we'll get to do it under better circumstances soon.
Yeah,
thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Pete, Logan, and Pete. Appreciate it, guys.